Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Disruptive Business, celebrating those who change the game.
Disruptive Business features cutting-edge organizations and the innovative leaders who guide them. Today's show is brought to you by Minerva Planning Group. I'm Dana Barrett.
And I'm Micah Porter.
And as always, we have a great show lined up.
We do. We do. The topic today is video games. It's going to be an interesting one.
Who doesn't love video games?
Well, it's
Joe Biden right now. It was
guns yesterday. It's video games today. But what are you going to do?
I feel like, you know, I'm going to date myself right now, but I feel like in our generation, video games came along later. Now people grow up with them. You know, I mean, like they come out and like 5 seconds later, they're playing video games. Like at 6 months old, they know how to run an iPad and a computer and a phone. And they're like, you know,
well, yeah, it's
they don't
it's,
speak. They just play video games.
No. It's a change. Well, you know, I keep mentioning on the show that I've got a 6-month-old daughter and she seems really at home with looking at the iPhone and the iPad and what have you. It's a natural thing for her. So, yeah, it's definitely a change, I think.
Yeah. Though we don't have babies in the room with us right now. We got three experienced gentlemen here. Why don't you introduce them for us?
Well, first up, we've got Jesse Lindsley from Thrust Interactive. Jesse is a recurring guest on the show at this point.
Veteran of the show.
Thanks so much for coming back, Jesse. And Jesse, you invited two additional folks for the roundtable.
Yeah, so this show we're going to just talk about Atlanta game development, which is great, and we have some industry veterans here. So I am the new kid on the block, and I will I'll interject when called upon. But I'm excited to listen to these guys talk. So we've got Blake Lewin from Transgaming. And we have Alan Wilson from Tripwire Interactive. So you want to introduce yourself, Blake?
Though I like how we just got you in as a host now. Yeah. That was really slick on our part.
It facilitator.
Was that's right.
You available Fridays at 11.
He's cheap, too.
Well, I'm, as Jesse said, Blake Lewin, president of Transgaming Digital Home. We're creating a digital distribution network for video games to smart and connected TV sets. Prior to that, I've spent 16 years at Turner Broadcasting, where my big claim to fame there was building GameTap, which was a broadband distribution service. It was Turner's first broadband entertainment network where they weren't using video as the content, and they were using video games as the content.
Interesting.
And we've also got Alan Wilson. Alan, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi, guys. Alan Wilson, Vice President, Tripwire Interactive, but you did that bit already. Yeah, as you gathered, we'll get the obvious joke out of the way. I'm not from around here, originally.
Generally, when I have Brits on the show, I let them talk the entire time. Just saying.
That's a very sweet view. I'm not actually a Brit. I'm from Alabama.
I like those two. Those are good.
Yeah,
there's some commonalities there, right?
Yeah, I'll think about that.
give that a bit.
I'll nod politely and, yeah, move swiftly on. Tripwire Interactive, yeah, we've been here in the Atlanta area for, what's it now, 6-7 years. Develop and publish video games, mostly shooters, to be nice and topical, for PC, console, and mobile.
All right, very good. Very good. Well, you know, as I mentioned, we're going to change the format of this show just a bit, and it's going to be more of a roundtable. And one of the first questions that occurred to me is, and particularly, Alan, after having read your website, you had the choice between Baltimore, London, Amsterdam, or Roswell, Georgia, when founding the company. So the question arises, why Atlanta?
There's kind of two answers to that. One is the polite, politically correct answer, which is that Atlanta is, of course, a great place to do business, great transport hub, and all sorts of other good things. There's also the fact that London and Amsterdam are disgracefully expensive, and from what I hear, Baltimore's a pit. so we've kind of picked on the South.
Any Baltimore listeners, we're sorry.
Yeah, I would apologize, but I'm a Brit, so...
We'll be apologizing to Alabama shortly, I'm sure.
It's all right, I'll work my way around the states and see who else I can offend. Then I'll start on the Europeans. It actually comes down to a real mix of, you know, it was a startup with a small amount of money. You know, where is that small amount of money going to be most effective? And frankly, London and Amsterdam sure as hell weren't good places to put our money. It would disappear real quick. And when we looked around, you know, between Baltimore and Atlanta, and that's just because of where people lived at the time, Atlanta does turn out to be, you know, a pretty good place to do, especially high-tech business.
Well, doesn't also Atlanta seems to have a pretty strong gaming community, it seems to me.
It really does, and that's, you know, it was fortuitous that we got Alan here, because his company's been doing an amazing job. But since he's been here, quite a few other companies have grown up, Hi-Rez, Chris Klaus and his Kineva, Thrust Interactive, and I mean, countless. So I'm going to offend a lot of people by not mentioning them, but there's a lot.
And all those other great ones.
That's all those other great ones.
Yeah. So when we started in 8 years ago, there were six, and now there's over 70. So
wow.
Now the 70 is not big studios like Alan, but we have 70 companies that are making games here in Atlanta. So that's a huge uptick.
What's led to the uptick? Is it just the fact that there were a couple of, if you will, anchor companies that then attracted more talent, or what would you attribute that to?
There's a couple different things. I mean, one, having come from Turner, there's a lot of throw off of talent from Turner as people leave and decide to go on and move. Cartoon Network, Adult Swim have done a phenomenal job with creating video games for their audiences, and that talent comes Turner. You know, does their time and then moves off to create their own studios. I think additionally, the state having now tax incentives really aggressively went after trying to draw companies here. That's what helped bring Transgaming here. Transgaming is a Canadian company, and I didn't want to leave Atlanta. So, but to convince them to come here, it was really easy because Atlanta and Georgia as the state had a lot of good incentives that made it make sense for a company to start up here.
Well, I think that's an interesting point just because there's so many moving parts to creating a game. It's not just sitting a bunch of people sitting in front of computers. And it clearly is part of the entertainment industry, and that is the tax credits that you're talking about. Can you kind of talk a little bit about what all the different moving parts are?
Of creating a game?
Yeah.
Well, I can start with that. I think one of the other thing to add to Blake's comment about that infrastructure in Atlanta is the school systems. So we have great colleges that now have great game development or creative programs. So we went through a time where it was with six companies, none of those students were staying in town. And so it was this growth of you know the people being incubated at Turner and creating studios and then new studios coming here like CCP and another studio and Tripwire and then other studios being created where we're able to start to keep some of that talent and that talent is just a piece of it. To your point about the moving parts, the infrastructure companies are just extremely important to games as they are to any, you know, software development type company. And we, Atlanta just does a good job, has that infrastructure. And really it was, and that's why I look at the Atlanta game development community is kind of poised to bloom because of all those different infrastructure benefits and programs and things like that. So, Alan, you talk about the infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you mentioned the tax credits. I mean, those do make a very big difference. And it's one of those things, I think, that you know, we mentor quite a few small companies and groups who are kind of thinking of starting up businesses around here. And that's, you know, the whole tax incentive system, it does make a big difference. It means, you know, you're talking about potentially a large chunk of your costs. For someone like us, you know, it has that direct benefit. I think one of the things that people also forget about that is that, you know, Jesse's talking about the infrastructure building up around here. We're seeing more and more supporting companies growing up around here. For example, Giant spinning up a big motion capture facility. I believe it's in the Turner Building. But they used to be out on the West Coast doing movies and all the rest of it. And they've now set up that facility back here. And one of the spin-off benefits from all the tax incentives is, frankly, it makes it very attractive for us to spend our money here in Georgia when we're outsourcing work than to go somewhere else, you know, because basically the tax incentive is there, and it, you know, we spend the money here in Georgia, we get a tax incentive, we go spend it in China or Ukraine or somewhere, and we don't, you know, which means that when we're outsourcing work, we can outsource to someone who is actually here, who you can go and, you know, you can go stand in their offices and go, that's really good, that's great, this is garbage, fix that. You can do all that. You know, there's no idiot language barriers. The people are literally down the road. And we get a tax incentive as well. So, we're starting to see now, I think, probably in the last, it's probably only in the last 12 months, more of that, you know, large-scale support infrastructure starting to grow up around.
I would say that we're in where I liked it. Well, we were looking at they were looking at getting rid of games in the tax credit. We had to go and kind of lobby against that. And I was liking the Atlanta game development community. We are in our awkward teenage years, and taking something like that away, we're not there yet where we can kind of run on our own. And so it's great that it's they've changed it a little and put in some things like caps and things like that. But it's just, I think it's going to be very important for us to get to where we are on our own.
And it is a very important proactive thing, too, because it's not like Atlanta, Georgia invented it, right? I mean, there's other states like Louisiana and other countries like Canada that have significant programs to draw people to them in game development and media.
Well, yeah, and some of them are very aggressive about trying to get companies like us to move.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some interesting offers, but you know, we're kind of rooted here in Atlanta now. So.
Well, Alan, I know when you launched your first game, you went via digital distribution route, if I'm not mistaken. You used the Steam platform.
Yep.
How easy is it being in Atlanta to attract the attention of traditional publishers, or do you even need to worry about doing that anymore?
Yeah, if you want us to be disruptive, I'll say I don't care. Okay. I really don't care about the traditional publishers for us doing big games. I mean,
and Alan can say that and mean that. Not everybody can do that.
I can't say that.
Yeah, I mean,
I do. I care.
Yeah, of course, you love them. You love them dearly. We don't. No, I mean, if you've read the stuff on the website, you'll have seen that when we started up, we had no money, and we went to a publisher, and we got it. You know, we did both a digital distribution deal with Valve for Steam, and we were about the second or third non-Valve property up on Steam. Someone told me, I think there's 2,000 games up there now. Mm. I think the comment was made one time by Jason Holtman that we kind of proved the model to them, because they weren't sure that putting third-party titles up there was going to be a good idea. And you look at it now, and they're generating, I think, somewhere between 500 million and a billion a year.
Was there concern that they wouldn't have the quality control over the third-party games, or what was?
I don't think it was the quality control. It was just, would anyone be interested?
Right.
You know, digital distribution, this was 2005, digital distribution was kind of a lightweight thing. People didn't have the huge broadband capacity they have now.
Mm.
And it was very much maybe people be interested. I mean, yeah, some people might be interested. Well, let's try it and see what happens. And it wasn't, you look back on it, it was blindingly obvious. You know, of course, it's 2020 hindsight is a wonderful thing. But, yeah, we did the, for retail, we did the traditional publisher thing. And ended up in the usual fights about, excuse me, could you actually do your quarterly royalty payments and all the rest of that garbage.
They were using the old record company model for accounting.
Yeah, very similar.
A little leaky.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And, terribly sorry, we screwed up again. Yeah, we're 3 months late, but it was a terrible mistake. Garbage jokes you've heard before. So the next time around, when we released Killing Floor in 2009, we kind of went, why don't we do this ourselves? And we had just enough leverage to get some companies interested in doing it. And to be fair, to Jesse's point, we only just had enough leverage. A lot of the companies just going, no, you're tiny, we're not interested, your volume will be, go away. And we ended up from there doing distribution for other people as well, which has been an interesting experiment, but it's, then we lead off into the whole debate about retail versus digital. Where's that going? Are Walmart, GameStop, and everybody else going to be selling boxed games at all next year?
Can you share any of your numbers? Because we're always talking in Atlanta about, if only we had a big hit, if only we had that big hit. And every time I hear that, I go, guys, look at what Tripwire.
Alan is the big hit. So
okay,
sure.
You want bragging rights.
Yes.
Killing
you guys
Floor.
Don't beat your own drum enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those strange
chip on his shoulder about, well.
Okay. I was about to try and think of another state to offend, but I can't slide one in there.
Iowa doesn't listen. We don't have any listeners in Iowa, so fire away.
I don't even know where Iowa is.
There you go. Yeah. Nicely done.
Thank you. You're talking about numbers. I mean, Killing Floor, we're north of 1.5 million units on PC. Just for the record, that puts Killing Floor in units sold as one of the top 50 PC games of all time.
Wow.
You know, It's on PC. I mean, people tend to spit out the figures for all platforms. Right. You see a Call of Duty doing 8 million units, but that's across all platforms.
That's right. If you look at PC game sales, if you cross 100,000, everyone's going, woohoo! I mean, obviously, they're the AAA hits that, you know, that the publishers continue to promote, and that's why you have Call of Duty 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, 1,000. You know, it's, but something like what Alan's doing is just unheard of in the industry.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's... I'm British, so I'm terribly bad at, you know, blowing our own trumpet and all that stuff, or beating our own trumpet and
mixing metaphors. Blowing your own drum.
Yeah, that. This could go horribly wrong.
Lost in translation.
Yeah, we hope. You're right. I mean, but also don't forget what my brain just went completely. What Hi-Rez have done with Tribes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's got you look at that. I mean, that's gone really well for them as well. They're pushing the free to play model, mm-hmm. and that's worked really, really well. I mean, and they've done some big numbers as well. And people are forgetting that Atlanta has kind of become a base for a small number now, but a growing number of independent and genuinely independent games companies.
But getting back to your success on the PC and, mm-hmm. and hitting those kind of numbers, what would you tell other Atlanta game developers you need to do that? What did you do that was different? Was it the content? Was it the platform? To what do you attribute the success?
I mean, it's all of that. I mean, we're willing to take the risks about, you know, where do you do distribution? I mean, when OnLive appeared a couple of years ago, sorry, Blake, if that's too close to competition.
Ouch.
And has now disappeared. Well, may have disappeared or not, but it's a separate debate entirely.
That was Microsoft's platform, is that?
No, OnLive was set up by...
Steve Perlman, who did do web TV, if you guys remember that, from way back in the day, and then he actually did QuickTime before that. So he's got this long track record of building great technology, not so great of a track record of creating sellable products. Obviously, QuickTime is the one exception. But OnLive is a game streaming service where you can either get it through your PC or tablet, or you can get a little box for $99 and connect it to your TV and play games.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we saw that appear, I think they were demonstrating it at GDC about 2-3 years ago, mm-hmm. the first time around. I can't remember exactly what date. But we had a look at it, and we ended up talking to them, and we put one of our games up on Live because cloud gaming, it's one of those areas that if it breaks big, like Steam did, mm-hmm. You want to be in there. It's a lot of it's being is about being prepared to take some risks. You mm-hmm. know, just try stuff. I think a lot of people, apart from getting over the teeny tiny hurdles of actually getting the money together to build a game in the first place. Excuse me. It's, you've got to be prepared to take some risks, to put yourself out there.
Well, probably you getting into Steam early, because then there wasn't a huge catalog of stuff, just gave you visibility that now, I mean, you look at the iOS platform for iPhone and iPad, it's like, somewhere in the 400,000 games that there are, maybe somebody will notice. And as much as it's a great opportunity for publishers, and talk about a disruptive technology. I mean, the iPhone with the App Store was unbelievably disruptive to games. It still comes down to the age-old question of how do I get noticed?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's become a huge problem for Steam. I mean, you're quite right. We were up there. When we were up there, we were about the third one up there. You know, when you've got a list of three, it's not that hard to be found. When there's a list, I mean, we were looking at the Christmas sales, and there's a rotating list of 2,000 games. How do you get seen in that stuff? And the app stores are even, as you say, it's an order of magnitude more insane.
And now just getting on the platform. So now because of the Steam being inundated with, will you look at my game? They now have launched Project Greenlight, where it's like a Kickstarter for your game. You're trying to get people to like it. You're trying to get people to, and some of these guys, some of them are ideas, some of them are actual games. We have a game that is doing very well on iOS and Android that we want to get up on Steam. And, we've been working on it for about, 4 months, and we're not getting very far. So there is now this barrier to entry. So even if we were to get in, how do you get noticed, to Alan's point? I don't know. I don't have the answer for you.
There is no easy answer.
In the gaming industry, does catalog have any value? If you've got your older titles, are you making your money off the hits
That was my if you want to go back a few years, 2002 when I was at Turner, it was like, nobody can do anything with catalog games. I mean, the games industry was, You get it out there. You sell it for 3 months. If you're a hit, maybe you get 2 years out of it, maybe. But after your 3 months as an average title, you're in the discount bin, and then you're nowhere, or you're bundled with, you know, 20 CD-ROM games of all time kind of a thing.
And a free disc from David Hasselhoff.
Exactly. So what I presented to Turner was, you know, Turner Broadcasting had created huge networks around back catalog of video. So broadband was burgeoning at that time, 2002, 2003. It looked like actually people were going to get halfway decent bandwidth. So the pitch for GameTap was, is you take all these back catalogs and you create a game distribution engine that actually can emulate every platform. So we had everything from Pong all the way to Splinter Cell. And you programmed content in, video games in, as content, just like you would into a TV show or stuff like that. So it was a great experiment. It was a little early. You know, the market went south in 2008, and Turner sold off everything that wasn't cable-centric, which included GameTap. But it was an exciting time for Turner, and an exciting time for me, because it really got to test the models and see that, yeah, there is desire for catalog. There's also an insatiable desire for new stuff, and which I think is what the iPhone and the iPad have really demonstrated.
So I have a couple of questions that are sort of coming to mind. I mean, I play a few games here and there, not many. But I guess my first question is, with all of these different ways you can play now on your iPhone, your iPad, your Android, your TV, your PC, where are people going for the most part? Is there one platform that's really the favorite, or does it depend on the person? Does it depend on age?
So I can take that, since I'm different from Alan. Alan is developing his own IP. I'm different from Blake, because Blake is developing gaming platform technology to enable the distribution of games. I make games for other people. So as a third-party developer, I get 5 requests a week. Will you build this game for us? And so I am listening to what platforms they want. They're asking me what questions based on their audience or their brand or their IP, which platforms they should support. And it really comes down to, you need to have an answer for every platform. So you know, there's nobody that comes to me and that says, I want to create this game, but I only want to do it on this one platform. I had one company, and it was a big luxury car company, that said, we just want to be on iOS. And I helped them figure out that was not the right way to go. And they looked around, and they were able to leverage a very successful game across multiple platforms. So people want to be, and at least for me, I don't do console development games. I do mobile and web. And so they want to be on the web. They want to be on Facebook. They want to be on iOS. They want to be on Android. Now I'm hearing for the first time that people want to be supporting Microsoft Mobile and Windows 8. So somebody comes to me, they want to be on all those platforms.
Interesting.
And with that cross-platform, it really is, gaming starts to become contextual, right? I mean, I go and I sit and I buy Halo 4, and I sit down and I sit aside time to, like, do Halo 4 like I would, you know, watch Lord of the Rings or a big movie motion picture. At the same time, I've got, you know, a bunch of stuff on here in between whatever I'm playing on my iPhone. And it's expanded the audience and expanded the places that people play games. The most obvious is now I think the bathroom is probably the biggest game play space on.
Yeah, yeah, we have a time limit on time spent in the bathroom in the office, just for that very reason. Yeah, we're trying to work out how not to have wireless in there.
Interesting.
That's awesome. I'm glad we got it. It only took us 24 minutes to get to the potty humor. I'm proud.
Sorry. But you're right. I mean, it's a cross-platform. There's two things lurking there, which is, you know, if someone's trying to think about, where do I start, which platform? The range is enormous, and it's not going to get any smaller. And you get back to that point of, how do you get heard? And, you know, you're asking me, there's no big secret to it. I think there are those brief moments. You know, you could say we got very lucky with Steam. We got there first, so we were the only one to be heard. Now, as Jesse says, I mean, the green light, it's a real scrum. I guess you're back into that situation of, how do you get heard? How do you ever get heard? You get the word out there somehow. You find the fans. You find people who'll be interested. And it's very, very hard.
Yeah, it's definitely not, if you build it, they will come, because they won't come. And so when we're talking to folks, that's important. We need to educate them on, you know, it going viral is not a valid business plan. So
for anything anymore, period.
Yeah, but how many times have we heard that in pitches?
Every single one of them.
Yeah, everybody who wants a commercial wants it to go viral. Yeah. Every YouTube video, better go viral, right. Please.
I remember when viral was a bad thing.
So there are ways that you can prime the pump. There's ways that you can buy installs and acquire customers. So money works, and marketing campaigns that are very expensive work. But if you don't have those, what we look for are if somebody has an unbelievable social following and they're doing things like they've got a great celebrity personality, we look for those things to put in the mix to separate yourself. So we're working with an ex-NBA great, NBA all-star, and we're working on some games. They're going to be releasing four this year, and Thrust is going to be releasing the fourth one. The first one hit the market this week. And again, we're seeing great people are finding the game because of that association with that kind of celebrity brand.
And that also creates huge opportunities for people like myself. I mean, my passion is in creating gaming networks, right? I mean, in the same way, you know, how do you find a TV show? Well, ABC, you know, pumps you up because they've curated or created content that they want specifically for their audience or for their brand. And currently at Transgaming, we've created GameTree TV, which is the connected TV service that we have. And the idea is to curate games, to find the right games that are going to work in that 10-foot space. It's very different playing on the couch 10 feet away from the screen than playing on a computer or playing on your iPhone. So it opens up with all these games. And with the inability to get found, it opens up a great opportunity for people like myself to build networks that create a brand that becomes a trusted brand to consumers, that then they know, oh, I'll go to GameTree TV because it's got the stuff that I want. And then I can have relationships with Jesse and Alan and bring these things in.
But you're right. I mean, I think a lot of it is down to it's that point that you're trying to find something to leverage off. When you're talking about, you know, if you're working with an NBA all-star and things like this, there's something to leverage off. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're lucky now. We've been established a good period of time. We can leverage off a large and steadily growing client base. People will come, but it's finding that that key, and not just one key, but as many as you can find that just this group of people are interested in this and this, and I've got access to this thing here. It is just it's the same as it's ever been. I mean, I think
it's an entertainment business like anything, right? Yeah. It's a hits-driven business, and what the music industry has to do to get music noticed, what the film industry has to do to get films noticed, it's the same thing with video games.
It's so interesting to me though, because when Jesse was on the show before, I told him I played video games way back when. I worked for a video game company in the early '90s, early mid '90s, and we did sales licensing and distribution deals to take games worldwide. I handled Latin America, so we might sell three in Argentina and you were top of the charts. But what's interesting is how much more mature the business has come, because back then no one talked about the complexities of distribution. You just found distribution. No one talked about leveraging specific ways to get your games noticed. You just tried to come up with the best game and you put it out there. So it's really evolved.
If you go back far enough, you were pressing them on little floppy disks and putting them in plastic bags and taking them into the...
Absolutely.
So when that happens, there's kind of an evolution of... So now the barrier to entry is so small, which is fantastic. I tell people when they're coming to interview for Thrust is I don't hire anybody that's not working on a game. And really, it's gotten to the point where I don't hire anybody if they haven't published a game. I want to see what they're doing. I want to see them publish something, and I want to see them put their money where their mouth is, and then I get inspired by those games, and those are the people that I want to come work for me. But so it pushes it to, all right, how do I get found in that marketing, and we're seeing different ways to do it. I talked to a group yesterday that I build lots of advert games, and so now we're coming up with a platform where we can do advert games across multiple platforms that I can drive game distribution through mini games, and that's exciting. The other big question of everybody that I talk to is, how do I monetize this? And I could talk for an hour on how to monetize, and it's different for every platform, and I can't just say mobile. My monetization strategy for iOS is going to be different than Android. Now we're seeing a game that could be across all these different platforms, and these connected TVs are definitely, I'm getting a lot of requests for that, and that monetization strategy, Blake and I have talked about it, is different than that if I'm on the web, or different than I'm on a PC, and different than I'm when I'm on Facebook. So it's a moving target. target. There is no, you know, true, this is the way you do it. But, you know, there are people like Alan that you try to, you figure out what they're doing and you try to replicate that. But what I would say about Alan and the Tripwire success story is they did it in a bootstrapped environment. It was very, very difficult. And so they can be an inspiration for somebody with nothing. I mean, they really can be. But I would like to see in Atlanta foster and incubate these kinds of ideas and these types of companies where it's not so hard. This shouldn't be a, you know, and I've got the marks of an entrepreneur and a startup, and I've been kind of bootstrapped for a long time. But I would like to see us kind of support and so it's not so difficult. That would be my goal.
That's been one of my pet topics for probably about the last 5 or 6 years.
But so. What is Atlanta lacking? You know, what would make it easier for a game developer here?
Well, there's a couple things. One, not to jump all over the investment community here, although I could do that.
Oh, come on.
But also, I mean, video games themselves are not really conducive to investment. I mean, the market hasn't matured that much where people can say, oh, I'm going to invest in a video game title. They'll invest in companies, but what is a company without a good title? So you kind of got a chicken and the egg thing. So it's part of just the continuing evolution of games as media. But in Atlanta in general, I think games are really misunderstood. I mean, there needs to be a lot of education about, you know, I think it's just 13-year-old boys in basements.
You know, at Siege, which is the Southern Interactive Expo, which is, what, 6-7 years old now? Mm-hmm. You know, which is run by the Georgia Game Developers Association. In the last couple of years, we've deliberately sponsored an extra day's session on that about as an investment conference, because when we first started up here, we started up with 2 people in an office and $37,000. And as Jesse said, it was very hard. It got ridiculously stupid. We went round, you know, in those first couple of years, apart from with publishers and deciding that they're somebody we weren't going to work with. I was going to say something else.
That was probably an English phrase for it, I'm sure.
Yeah, old Anglo-Saxon. We went around with some of the local investment community, and you know, to Blake's point, you realize that we talked to a couple of the VCs, and a couple of them were, yeah, some would give you the standard BS and sort of smile sweetly when you realize they have not got a clue what you're talking about. They like the numbers, but haven't got a clue what you're talking about. A couple of them are honest enough to say, look, really love the numbers, love the way this works, but we do not understand. You know, they're honest enough to say, this is not our field, this is not our area of expertise, we don't understand. You find someone else to lead in, we'll jump on. At which point then, you know, you're off talking to VCs and on the West Coast or in Boston. Talking to the angel community here, I don't mean this to be offensive, but I mean what the angel community here understands realistically is construction. And some stuff that's spun up probably after Chris Klaus around Georgia Tech and some technology investment. I believe that one group has made one investment in the games industry, which we won't talk about because that went horribly wrong. And you know, it's one of those sort of standing jokes that if they'd asked us in the industry, we would have said, no, I wouldn't do that if I was you. It's going to go very badly south. And it was blindingly obvious to us. So there is what it boils down to is there's a big gap between the investment community and the gaming industry.
Well, my day job, because believe it or not, this show doesn't pay enough to keep the lights on. And but my day job is I've got a wealth management firm, and so I talk to folks about investments. And if you look at the film industry, typically the reputation of the film industry is you invest in a movie, it's a vanity investment. You don't expect to see much return from it, and part of that's because if you look at a hits-driven business, it's tough to pick the hit. So if you were talking to the investment industry here in Atlanta, what would you tell them the difference was between investing in video games and investing in another hits-driven type of business?
I wouldn't say there's any difference. That's okay. The whole problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can take a number of models to look at it. I mean, we've talked around the industry here about incubators, where what you're trying to create is a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you're bringing in people who have ideas, who have some technical skills, and to Jesse's point earlier, I mean, how many are there now in the schools around here? 2,000 people doing games-related courses? Wow. It's a very large number. Now, you know, we do kind of road shows around the colleges talking to people about how to get jobs in the industry and things to do and not do. And frankly, I mean, a lot of those kids who are doing those courses won't end up in the industry. You know, they have not got the commitment, the skills, and all the rest of it. That's just life, sorry. But some of them, you know, have got a lot of what it takes. So, you know, an incubator pulling in some of that talent would be a very interesting way to go. But the other side to it, I mean, we, you know, especially you know, independent developers like us and publishers like ourselves, are only too keen to slag off the big publishers. But you look at what EA, Activision, Ubi, and everyone are doing. They know it's a hit-driven business. When they get a hit, a Call of Duty or whatever, yes, they will milk it until it squeaks and then keep milking it. And you can't blame them because it's, you know, they've got to make a return. Because the other thing that companies like that are doing is, you know, I looked at some stats on Activision a couple of years ago, and you realize that they released over 200 titles in, you know, in 1 year, of which two made a profit. You know, and they are doing that. They are taking that risk. Yeah, sure. There's a whole bunch of separate arguments and rude things to be said about publishers, but that's. But they are taking that huge risk. And to your point, yes, it's a hit-driven industry. There is no easy way. The cost of entry for you know, for games that we build is high, but for mobile games and things like that, web-based games is very low these days.
But also, so is the revenue potential, right? I mean,
that's
the iPhone's driving it down to 99 cents to zero.
Right, yeah.
So the only way to really, I mean, the people who are really making money on the iPhone apps are Apple.
30%. You
know? Yeah, yep. I mean, it's a great business. I mean, they're brilliant. But the games that seem to be making the most money right now are microtransaction driven businesses. Mm-hmm. So you give the game away for free, and then you have people purchase tokens or objects
in
or
level
whatever.
Purchases or
exactly
what,
yeah
right.
Yeah, you look at you talk about local success stories. I mean, Blue Mammoth, I mean, those guys put out a game earlier in the year. We were talking to them about Steam, but it went so huge off its own initial launch that they had to back off worrying about Steam because they're having so much success off the base game. And doing that purely off, purely through the web, so they've gone off in another direction with that. But you know, it can be done. Picking the winners is just it's a lottery. And yeah, to be fair to the investment community, yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's a vanity investment is not an unreasonable expression. Yeah. But you can work with. I mean, there's enough people around here now who would be only too happy to work with the investment community. I mean, all three of us around this table for a start. Just to help them look at, we can see how this one could work. We can help mentor because it actually matters to us that there is a gaming community growing around
right.
here.
And continuing to support it. So while you can't pick a hit, you could invest in some of the companies that are here that are multi-title companies. You could, work with incubators. I mean, there's lots of things to do to help grow the community so it continues to build as it is. And,
yeah.
and I don't, it's not going to stop. I mean, with or without investors, games are here to stay.
Yeah.
And I think Atlanta's going to be a place that it's important.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned the tax credits and things earlier and the risks to those. I mean, to be clear on things like that and investment, the industry isn't going to cave in if all of that goes away, if there's no, if there's still no investment next year and the year after from local investors, and if the tax credits go away, that will dramatically slow the growth of the industry, which we are, when you stop and think about it, is a very bad idea for Georgia, simply because if the industry is growing at the pace it's growing and accelerating, the revenue that we're pouring back into Georgia is huge, massive export business and all that money coming back into Georgia and building, spin-off businesses, but I mean, those spin-off businesses are areas where people could invest. So it's, I think what's lacking is just the, a level of the will from the investment side to sit down and talk to the established elements of the games industry who, we're not after money anymore.
Right.
Been there, done that, didn't get it.
We are probably thankfully, but that's another story.
All the way to the bank.
Oh, yeah, sure. If you want to know how much I'm laughing at the bank, I mean, basically we went out looking for a 50K investment in Killing Floor in the last couple of months of the development of that. Couldn't get it. Talked to a bunch of idiots. At least one of them got fired, I gather, later that year. But that's another story. He so deserved it.
We don't do Schadenfreude on this show. So, yeah.
That's right. And you realize that You know, within, I think, 12 months, we'd returned 20 times our money on that. You know, since then, I actually stopped to think about this earlier. I'm not even sure what the return is now. I'd have to go back and run the numbers, but it's a very large multiplier.
You could pay someone to run the numbers for you.
Yes. No, I'm too mean. I do it myself.
I would say that, you know, we are seeing some gaming-type opportunities that we're getting a lot of investor interest. And these are things like gamification. These are games like educational games. These are things like serious games and training games. And so we're working with two companies that are creating platforms in those spaces. And so that's great that that's less of a vanity investment. There's some real true – it's not as sexy, but it is really powerful. And for a company like Thrust, where we feel like games will change the world, we have this opportunity to impact lots of industries, and we're powering those types of companies. So, you know, I hope to see, you know, so Alan is a great success story of, man, we missed that. We need Alan to beat that drum and blow that horn so people look at that. We also need a success story where there is some investment. People have made it. That's not what happened with Alan. And so he's an inspiration for all us indie devs. But we need inspiration for these angel investors and these VC mm-hmm. groups. And so we get that. We also need an anchor store, I would say. You know, a larger company that has 150, 200 type, you know, business, and the Atlanta Economic Development Group is working on that. They were close a couple years ago, and I know Blake is helping with that. So we need a few of those things to happen, and again, we'll be poised to bloom, and we are poised to bloom, and then I think we will be a top 10 city in game development. We have all the ingredients to do that. We're definitely not. We're barely in the top 20.
You know, it's funny. We had another show on the station a couple of days ago, and somebody was saying Atlanta's always trying to be the something of the South, you know, the Silicon Valley of the South, the Hollywood of the South, the something. And I think, and her point at the time was, we just need to be Atlanta. And Atlanta needs to build its own reputation, and in this case, you know, as like the gaming capital of the South, but not imitating somebody else.
You know, that's so funny, and it's so true. And I don't know what it is. And this is a gross generalization, but I think Southerners really underestimate themselves. It's like, oh, New York, oh, Los Angeles, oh, say if only, right? But it's like, you know, hell, the South will rise again, right? I mean, it's like, come on. It's like, I really am inspired by it. It's like, let Atlanta be
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
And there are some really great things happening in a variety of different industries. And I think, yeah, we need to stop trying to be the something else and just be mm-hmm. Atlanta. And right now, as you mentioned, you know, we're moving up the ranks sort of as a gaming city. And we want to get to the top of that rank and just be, everybody else will say, we want to be the Atlanta of, mm-hmm. you know, the West Coast.
Yeah, hang on a second. I mean, I'll pick up on that. I mean, you say we want to be the number one, the top. I don't actually care. you know, I just want us to have a vibrant industry. I mean, if Montreal and so on, you know, up in the frozen wastes is, you know, still doing its thing and all the rest of it, I really don't care. Mm-hmm. But I want, you know, as yet another of these people living in Atlanta and working in Atlanta who isn't from Atlanta, you know, I just like to see it be successful and build its own momentum. I mean, we are seeing interest from, you know, from some investors who are genuinely trying to figure out, clearly there's people making money in this business. How do we get a piece of that?
Right.
And that is a difficult gap to close. I mean, how do you, I don't know. Well, I mean, we haven't come up with the answers.
Well, the other advantage when you've got a critical mass for an industry in a specific city, if you're an investor, you don't have to get on a plane. You don't have to travel. You're in the city. You can, there's a competitive advantage if you're an investor to being where mm-hmm. things are happening. So I think the two things will likely go hand in hand. As the game industry grows, there will be more folks like yourselves that will share your knowledge, and investors will suddenly go, okay, I get it. There's a model that I can work with. I understand it.
And I think that is part of it. I think Atlanta is becoming this digital entertainment hub that things will be you know, part of, but it's still a risky, you know, you understand investing. Investing is risky. What we need are people that understand that they can't look for that one, because you'll never find that one. But if you have the mentality that I'm going to invest in 20, and I know that one of those will be successful, then we start to grow. Things get a little bit easier. We can fail quickly, and we can, you know, build those hits. And that's what we need, and we don't have that right now. So everybody's struggling with that one. We need to have 20 of these things going, and we know that one of them is going to be a hit.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is the, I mean, the, the gaming sector around Atlanta, it's building a momentum. You can feel the momentum building. And people say, I've sat through enough meetings where people are going, oh, what's the one thing we need to do? And there isn't one thing. We have to just keep going. You know, all of us keep going, keep doing what we can do. And you know, all these pieces will steadily fall into place, so long as the momentum is there. And that's why we keep fighting for the tax credits, is because that builds momentum.
Just everything that you can do to build that momentum helps.
Well, being on the right trajectory, if I could say that, is good. So the fact that there isn't one thing you can point at, I think, is a good thing. We're just about out of time. So before we wrap it up, any closing thoughts from maybe each of you about sort of, you know, your sort of dreams for the year, you know, plans for 2013, how you see things going, any big games you want to talk about or new technologies you want to disrupt with? Blake, let's start with you. You're smiling.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's an interesting year. I didn't go to CES this year, but I've been monitoring what's going out there. And watching NVIDIA make their announcement, was it Shield, right?
Yeah.
Which is like this little game
controller. About 30 minutes later, I was asking them for free ones so we can test them out.
Yeah, with a flip-up screen.
Yeah.
There's all these dongles out there that are basically quad-core processors with HDMI input. You just plug it into the back of your TV set. Microsoft is looking at an Xbox Lite that's like a little TV. I mean, there's Ouya, which is this Android startup. I mean, it's like there's Steam.
The Valve guys,
the Piston, as they're calling it. I mean, it's like it's all starting to really start to snowball into the next phase of game distribution. So it's a very exciting time for me.
That is cool. We should have you guys all back like every January.
Yeah, there you
go. And kind of get like what's going on, for what happened last year, what's happening this coming year.
Is Moore's Law still operative 1 year later?
That's right. Yes.
So as for Thrust, we're going to continue to grow. We have a great team. We are working on great client projects. In 2013, we will launch at least four of our own joint venture IP, where we are, we have a stake in the game, and that's a very important part of my goals. I want to be doing 50% services and contract work, and 50% of my own IP, and we've got a lot of just a great momentum to do that, and a great team to execute. So I am super excited. Thrust has doubled revenue year over year for the last 3 years. We're going to double again this year. So, I'm on that right trajectory.
Awesome. And Alan, any other states you want to insult before we wrap up?
No, I'll save that one. I would insult the Welsh, but I do that most of the time anyway. We've got at least one big release this year, Rising Storm, which is another in the Red Orchestra series. Really, we've got a whole bunch of stuff on the back burner. I say on the back burner, that's the wrong way to put it. Hiding behind the scenes, for next year and the year after. One of the things that I've talked a little bit about privately, but we're looking to do here in Georgia, is to help spin up at least one more of those service companies who we can actually outsource stuff to. And if that takes some investment from us instead of somebody else, then we'll do it. Because we want to get that, it'll be good for us. It'll be good for some of the guys doing it. So there's those sort of things. Blake's already talked about the disruptive techs and things like that that are heading out. We're certainly going to be looking at, especially all the Steam related ones, because that's so much in our area. It's going to be an interesting year.
All right. Any closing thoughts from you? I can't even speak English anymore.
I understand. It's been a long show. No, it's interesting because. When you're not involved in certain industries within Atlanta, you don't realize how much is going on. And it's exciting to understand how vibrant the video game industry is becoming here in Atlanta, because I agree with everyone around the table. There's no question. I mean, particularly when you start putting ification at the end of a word, that there's just going to be huge demand moving forward. And if Atlanta can... If Atlanta can become one of the leaders in that while remaining Atlanta, it really helps the city moving forward, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it will be nice to hear how it's going in another 6 months or a year and see where you're all at. So thank you all so much for being with us. Let's give contact information in case people want to learn more about your companies, and then we'll close it off. Who wants to go first?
I'm Jesse at Thrust Interactive. ThrustInteractive.com is where you can learn more about us.
All right. Blake?
Yeah, Blake Lewin, Trends Gaming Digital Home. You can reach me personally at blake@transgaming.com.
And please call him in the middle of the night, 3 a.m.
That's right.
And Alan, it's A-L-A-N, at tripwireinteractive.com. For anyone who's interested, we're recruiting at the moment. Actually, I haven't put those jobs up on the website. I must do that later today. But yeah, tripwireinteractive.com.
Awesome. Thank you again so much for being here for Micah Porter and myself. That's our show. Thanks again to our sponsor, Minerva Planning Group, the good folks who provide their clients with financial peace of mind. Check them out online at minervaplanninggroup.com.